This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Money Manager Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, November. It's November. Wow, how quickly it comes to, how quickly the year flies by. It is already November 3rd, 2014, and we're going to be talking today about mutual funds or ETFs and which ones are right for you. Now, we welcome you to our Monday edition of Invest Talk, and Invest Talk is your partner in pursuing a more successful financial path. Now, as we work towards financial independence, myself and Steve Peasley, we are portfolio managers and we are principals at KPP Financial, and you know that's our day job, but we set aside this hour each day to be accessible to you, and we enjoy this opportunity to talk with you and share with you our insights and what we've learned over the many, many years we've been doing this professionally. Now, please bring your questions to us. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us by phone whenever you listen. And remember, if you're traveling, you can always hear us live 4 to 5 Pacific time on investtalk.com, but you can also reach us via podcast on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, on our website, investtalk.com, and you know, at call and ask your question, we will answer it on the next show, even if you're not listening to us live. Now, a few days ago, Steve wrote a market commentary blog called Volatility is King. And as we wrap up this, is the month of October just passed us by, it's important to understand the volatility that we're dealing with. There's a lot of volatility going on in the marketplace, and I urge you all to go there and read that portion of that blog and really understand where this volatility is coming from and what it means for everybody. Now, it's part of our responsibility to talk to our clients about their life situation and finances as we manage their investments. We discuss their goals, their assets, their debt. And it's a fact of life. In today's climate of easy access to credit, that many seniors are carrying a high level of debt. Now, the average debt held by senior citizens has ballooned to $50,000 in 2010, up 83% since 2011, according to Federal Reserve data. Now, it's always a slippery slope. The majority of these seniors had debt during their working years, and that has carried over into their retirement. And the big reason for this debt is due to increase in housing-related debt. Families headed by someone at least 60 years old had the largest increase in average mortgage debt in terms of percentage between 2000 and 2012. And it's not because more Americans bought homes, but more because they borrowed against their homes. Another interesting statistic. Only 24% of homeowners over the age of 62 had mortgage debt in 1992. Only 24%. But that figure has almost doubled to 45% in 2010. And if you have listened to us for very long, you know that Steve and I are big advocates of retiring with no mortgage. No mortgage. So the lesson, of course, is to make this your goal early on as you prepare for retirement. Prepare for your investment journey, your savings journey, your retirement journey. Even if you're young, middle-aged, old, it doesn't matter. This should be a goal for all of you, and have that on your radar for when you do retire. So now it's time to get you involved in the conversation. Let's hear your comments. You can talk to us live, 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk, or in between times. Just leave your question. Here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Quentin Lewis from Massachusetts. I have a question, and maybe it's a little silly, but when I take money out of the Roth 401k or IRA when I'm in retirement, and I'm also taking money out of my standard 401k, let's say, does the money that I take out of the Roth, even though it's not taxed, I totally understand, not taxed, But does that count as income? I mean, is that going to raise my my income, or is that just as if it's money saved in the bank? I'm just curious if it's going to raise my total income, even though it's not taxed, such that the money that I take out of the other account is put into higher bracket. Thanks a lot. Love your show. Take care.
Well, it's going to add to your income, but it's not going to add to your taxable income, right? Because that's all that anybody cares about is what is your taxable income when you're paying taxes, right? Because it's not taxable income. You've already paid taxes on it. So, no, it doesn't go towards your taxable income, but I guess it would go towards your total income. So, I hope that answered your question and gave you a little understanding of what that ultimately means when you do take money out of your Roth. And I think it's always good for everybody to have both a regular IRA and a Roth IRA, especially in retirement, because it gives you a nice tax diversification ability to figure out what years you want to take money from your regular IRA and what years you want to take money from your Roth IRA. Now, both ETFs and mutual funds are viable choices for investors, but do you know enough to make a good choice between them? ETFs or mutual funds, the difference is below the surface. That's our main talking point today. But I also have some other things I want to discuss. One is in relation to the elections tomorrow. Elections are tomorrow. I don't know if anyone knows that. Elections are tomorrow. And what might it mean? You know, there's about a 70% chance, they're putting about a 70% chance that Republicans will take the Senate and control Congress. What does that mean? What companies might do well? What companies might not do so well because of the elections tomorrow? Let's talk about that. Then I want to also talk about China. Bad loan surge in China. Report came out on the 30th, last Thursday. So I want to touch on that. What are the figures? What does that mean? And then Apple is issuing more debt. They're borrowing more money. Why are they doing this? And it's a little bit different than what they've done in the past. They've been doing it for about a year now. A little over a year and a half, I would say. And they're doing they're issuing their bonds in this round a little bit different than they have in the past. And why is that, and what does that mean? So those are my main talking points today. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. I want to know what is on your mind. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Give us a call. Please make your call sooner rather than later. Please don't wait until the last 5 minutes of the show. Because we always have to rush people off the phone, and don't get to spend the time that I really want to get your questions answered. So let's take a quick look of the market today. The S&P ended flat, pretty much. It was down a whopping 0.24 points. So nothing doing on the S&P. The Dow closed down 24 points. The NASDAQ closed up 8 points, really in the back of Apple. Had a pretty decent day today. You look at the other big tech bellwethers. Google was down $4. Amazon was flat. What are some other big ones? Priceline, that was down $7. Netflix, that was down $4. So really, Apple kept the NASDAQ up today. But overall, it was a pause day, I would say, overall. Really nothing doing on the overall markets. No real big economic news after a wild, wild October. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. You know, the S&P went up 200 points, almost 200 points. Call it 160-something points. Actually, the low on the S&P was 1820, and it closed the month at 2018. So yeah, almost 200 points in the span of 2 weeks. It's something that I haven't seen in my career that quickly. And I don't think you'll see anything like that very often, especially the upside. And you, the downside that happens, you know, 2008, you saw the downside. 200 points on the downside in 2 weeks in 08 was pretty normal. 200 points on the upside is a wild action. So you had a very, very wild, and that was after, you know, a 150-point down beginning of October. So it was a very big whipsaw month on the markets. And November, you saw a pause. And really, I think that has a lot to do with the elections tomorrow. Market waiting to see what happens. I think then you'll know a little bit more about the direction overall. Oil was down. Gold was down another $6. Oil hit about $78 a barrel. Lowest level since, 2012 on oil prices. It's going to be hard for me to see it turn around, I think, in the short term. Now, there's a new way to get into the conversation on InvestTalk to get your questions to us. You can send a message to us via Twitter now to @InvestTalk. That's InvestTalk with two T's. You can get your question to us the same way. Or you can go to the 24-hour listen line. 888-99-CHART is our number. Personally, I like to hear your voice.
This is InvestTalk as we continue now. One of the biggest challenges is the transition that one makes from their working lives into their retirement years. Need help with that? We're here for you. Call Justin at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, our talking point today is about mutual funds or ETFs. You know, mutual funds have been around for 30, 40 years now, maybe I think even longer, 50, 60 years. And ETFs have only been around for roughly 25 years, 20 to 25 years. Now, both ETFs and mutual funds are very viable choices for investors. And you get a lot, because mutual funds have been around for so long, you get a much broader menu of options. Now, new ETFs are coming on board almost every week, it seems. So there's new, more interesting dynamic options coming out every week in the ETF space. So, but still, the majority of the choices are still in the mutual fund space. And you know, there's different structures of mutual funds and different structures of ETFs. And the mutual fund side, there's open-ended funds, and that's almost every fund out there. You know, federal regulation requires that these funds have a daily valuation process called mark-to-market, which adjusts the fund's per-share price to reflect the change in the portfolio asset value each and every day at the close of each day. Then there's some closed-end funds, and there's not many of those out there anymore, but you know, that's the prices of those are determined based on supply and demand, driven by investor, you know, supply and demand. And those are the structure of mutual funds. And then on the ETF side, there's your traditional exchange-traded fund, index mutual fund. You have exchange-traded unit investment trusts, like the Qs and the Diamonds. That's what those are. And then there are exchange-traded grantor trusts, which are very similar to closed-end funds, meaning they float in value. So there's different structures, and after the break, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the differences between mutual funds and ETFs. Now, whenever an investor approaches a new industry, it's good to know what the risks are that a company in that sector must face to be successful. Do you have a question about risk in the oil industry or pharmaceuticals? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART.
Coming up on the next InvestTalk, investors still have a difficult time figuring out what they'll pay for financial advice, mutual funds, and retirement plans. An Investor's Guide to Fees and Expenses for 2014. We hope you'll listen to that podcast. And a reminder to join in the discussion. We're live between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you can, give us a call at 888-99-CHART. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast.
Thank you.
You're listening to Invest Talk. Maybe your employer would like to know how they can improve your 401k and cut down on their workload. Go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin. On the message, just write 401k and you'll get some useful information in return. And right now, you're invited to bring any money question to Justin at 888-99-CHART.
Let's get back to your voice mails and get them in the mix. I'm ready for any money questions this hour at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is David from Portland. I was just calling to get your take on Disney, symbol DIS. This is a stock that I wanted to buy for a very long time, and the price just seems way too high and keeps going up. If you were going to buy this stock, what price would you like to buy it at? Thanks. I love the show, and I'll be listening on the next podcast. Thank you very much.
All right. He's looking at Disney, Walt Disney Company. I don't think anybody out there needs an explanation of what they do. One of the best, you know, media companies in the world. One thing they don't, a lot of people don't understand about them is that they've now become more than just, you know, Mickey Mouse and theme parks. They own ESPN and a lot of sports franchises and not sports franchises, but sports media franchise, to say that, like ESPN. And this has given them a large boost to their bottom line, a large boost to earnings, and made them an even stronger and more well-diversified company beyond just, you know, Mickey Mouse and theme parks and movies, right? So it is a great company. I like how you have it on your watch list. But yes, it is expensive. No doubt about that. It is expensive. Is it wildly expensive? I don't know if I'd go that far. I don't know if I would say it's wildly expensive, but it is on the expensive side. It's a very profitable company. Its return on equity is at an all-time high at about 16%. So it's a great company to be invested in. Where would I like to buy it, however? You know, right now it's trading at $91.71. Its dividend yield is about 1%. It's hard for me to buy it up here. Ideally $50, that'd be a great place to pick it up. Fantastic place to pick it up. Will it get there? You know, if we have a bear market, it'll probably get there. You know, 2008, it went from $37 or so all the way down to 15 and change. In hindsight, everybody and their mother should have picked it up at 15 and change, but they didn't. So I would like to pick it up at about $50 a share. My first target in the more, you know, shorter to, I'd say, intermediate term would be about in the low 60s, $63 a share. That would be my first place. Okay, that's when I step in, put a little money here, and as it goes from 63 to that 50 range, that's where I would continue to add to it as it goes lower. And ultimately, I think the lowest it could go really is about $45 a share, $44, $45. That would be a really great long-term support, and I would buy it hand over fist at that price. But here, yes, it is extended. It is overbought. It is a little expensive. So I probably wouldn't buy it today, but definitely have it on your watch list. Thanks for calling. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278 is our number to get through. Let's finish up the mutual fund and ETF talking point. I talked about the legal structures of ETFs, but ultimately, I don't think many people really care that much about it. It's really about what the difference is when you're buying and selling it and overall performance in your portfolio, right? And the big difference between an ETF and a mutual fund is mutual funds trade only at the end of the day. Some of them have NAV prices early in the morning, but most of them they're priced each and every day at the after the close. And the ETFs trade intraday, and you can short an ETF. You can't short a mutual fund. Then when you get to expenses, most ETFs have lower expenses than mutual funds. Not always the case. Something you still have to look at, but generally ETFs have lower expense ratios, and I think that mainly has to do with the fact that most ETFs are index mutual funds. There's not a lot of actively managed mutual or ETFs. Now they're starting to become more, but they're probably will become more and more each and every year, more actively managed ETFs. But when it comes to mutual funds, there's far more actively managed mutual funds than passively managed indexed mutual funds. And I think that's the big difference on why mutual funds have higher expenses. So don't think it's that big of a difference. It just depends on the type of fund you're investing in. You know, and then mutual funds have loads a lot of times. You should never buy a loaded fund. Always only buy no load, hopefully no transaction fee mutual funds. That's what we buy for our clients. ETFs, you're going to pay a commission. I think there's some Vanguard or Fidelity or one of those firms where they don't charge you commissions on buying their ETFs if you hold the account with them. So that's something to consider. Then tax advantages. ETFs are more tax advantageous. Why? Because when somebody sells an ETF, the amount is redeemed as an in-kind redemption. In a mutual fund, the fund manager has to go in there and sell actual positions in the portfolio, which can create capital gains, and that's why ETFs are more tax efficient. Most ETFs, then we go to liquidity. Most ETFs are liquid, very liquid, but some are not, especially a lot of new ones. Mutual funds are very liquid, but only at the end of the day. All right? So both are good. I think ultimately ETFs are a little bit better. Inside a non-taxable account, meaning an IRA, 401k, I don't think it's that big a difference. There's really not that much of a difference. Now for a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to Invest Talk, and the lines are open right now. What do you want to talk about? Anything about money that matters? Your retirement preparation? Real estate? Choosing the right investment for you? We'll stop everything to talk about what's on your mind. Just call Justin right now at 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Lou in Texas. How you doing, Lou?
Hi, Justin.
You're well.
Doing good. I've got a question about GGN. It's near its 52-week low. Mm-hmm. Is there anything wrong with that other than price of gold and silver?
Yeah, well, it's really all about the miners.
Yeah.
You know, you had massive volume on the miners on Friday. You know, was that capitulation? You know, was that everybody and their mother getting out?
Yeah.
You know, it was up pretty nicely today. The GDX was up about 70 cents today. That was 4.5% or so. So,
uh-huh.
You know, started to reverse some. It's a matter of how much traction can it get. And if the GDX can get traction, then GGN will also get traction. It's just a matter of, you know, will that happen? And, you know, today's a nice positive, but it's got to continue, and it's got to really reverse eventually in the next, I think over the next month, it's got to get back above that 20 level in the GDX, and right now we're just below 18. So it has a lot of work to do, and so that's really what you got to key off when it comes to GGN.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, that sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, Lou. Appreciate it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is our number to give us a call. Let's talk a little bit about the election tomorrow. We have the election coming up, midterm elections, and what does it mean? What do elections mean for individual companies, and what could a Republican Senate and a Republican Congress mean for certain companies? Well, the polls show there's a 70% chance the Republicans will take the Senate, and this will benefit certain sectors, mainly coal. Why? Because Republicans usually don't care that much about the environment. They care about business, and they care about companies making money. So the likes of Canadian Natural Resources, Peabody Energy, they will do pretty well. What companies won't do very well in the energy sector? Well, refineries, Valero, certain refineries might not do so well, but Valero and Phillips 66, they might do well because of their ability to process low-grade Canadian oil, okay? And the reason that is good for them is what might happen is the Keystone Pipeline. Keystone Pipeline, remember anyone talking about the Keystone Pipeline? That would connect Canadian oil sands to U.S. refineries and the Gulf of Mexico. So Canadian natural resources would do well. Canadian oil sands, COS, would do well. TRP? I'm trying to remember the name of that stock. We just owned it for clients. TransCanada, there we go. They might do well. Valero and Phillips 66, they have the ability to process this low-grade Canadian oil. So those would do well if the Republicans got into Congress and they might approve the Keystone Pipeline. Then you have, like I said, the oil names, or the coal names, like Peabody Energy, Cloud Peak Energy, Cliff Natural Resources, Arch Coal. There's a coal ETF, KOL, that could do well. Might be a way to broadly play the whole sector. Now, you know, is that more than a trade? It might just be a trade. Might go up in the short term. Maybe it's priced in. You know, KOL has gone up pretty decently with their overall market. So that's something to think about. And then natural gas. Liquefied natural gas exports may also be eased following a Republican Senate. And the reason for that is because they might reverse the ban on exporting oil, exporting natural gas. And this could help a lot of companies. One in particular is LNG, liquefied natural gas, Cheniere Energy, one of the most overvalued companies in the market. So, you know, there's a lot of ways it could affect the energy sector. But what about other sectors? How about medical device companies? Medical device tax is one of the most controversial provisions in the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And that might change, and they might try to repeal this tax. And this would help names like Boston Scientific, Medtronic, Johnson & Johnson, St. Jude Medical, you know, medical device companies. Right? Then the housing sector. If Republicans win the Senate, Senator Richard Shelby is a Republican from Alabama. He is in charge of the Senate Banking Committee. And he is a strong supporter of Fannie and Freddie, so this might help their shareholders. And Congress may pare back the Federal Housing Finance Agency's role in mortgage insurance, which might help certain insurers like Radian, RDN, and MGIC. So those are some of the ways that a Republican win in Congress could affect the market, certain companies, and ultimately your portfolio. Now it's time for our InvestTalk personal feature, the day-to-day money decisions that can have lasting impact. Quiz time again. Here's your question today. How high must your FICO credit score be for you to qualify for the best interest rate? A, 400, B, 500, C, 700, D, 800. Think about it for a second. Answer it in your own head. The answer is C. And here's how it adds up. If you have a credit score in the mid-700s, you'll usually qualify for the best interest rates. It's not just whether you'll be okayed for that mortgage, it's the interest rate you'll get. And it also affects how much you'll pay for insurance as well. And by the way, Kiplinger.com says a quarter of adults have scores from 750 to 799. This score is a numerical summary of how much you owe and how promptly you pay your bills. So that's InvestTalk Personal. Do you have a question about your personal financial situation, 401ks, Roth IRA, or just a regular IRA? Give me a call. 888-99-CHART is our number. Go to InvestTalk.com and click on the Contact Justin button as well, and you can get your question answered that way.
How about a chart lesson? If you're a hands-on investor, you should be an InvestTalk insider. You'll receive regular chart lessons. You can also gain access to special updates and articles from Steve. To sign up, just go to InvestTalk.com and look for Insiders.
Hi, this is Rob from San Jose, and I'm interested in establishing a position in regional banks. Specifically, I've been eyeing ETF KRU, and I was wondering what you guys thought about that sector, as well as what a good entry point might be. Thank you very much.
All right, he's looking at KRU. This is the ProShares Ultra KBW Regional Banking ETF. Now, first off, you know, this is a leverage ETF, twice the performance of the KBW Banking Index. Yeah, make sure that's exactly what it is. Yeah, the KBW Regional Banking Index. And so this is a trading ETF. So don't think you should, I wouldn't establish a position for any long term or anything like that in this because it's leverage, you have tracking error, and over the long term, that is an issue. So if you're going to establish a position in this sector, I would not be doing it through this ETF. I would be investing in a single leverage, I mean something that's not leveraged. Could be KBWB, just the PowerShares KBW Bank ETF, where there's no tracking error, it's just single leverage. That would be a better way to go. Now, then the big question is, what do you buy? You know, or do you buy this? Do you buy this sector? And I would say I'm not a big fan of it. There's nothing that I'm seeing about the sector that I love. It's been flat pretty much all this year, you know, in a big trading range. And after a big run, usually that means a change of direction. It could mean a breakout eventually, but it's not showing me that yet. So I would stay away from the sector. I like where you're thinking, where it's, you know, not exposed to the global problems in the financial system, right, with China and with Europe and the issues in their financial systems that we frankly don't have at the current time. And so I like what your thinking is, and you're getting away from the big banks of the world that have a global footprint, like the JP Morgans, you know, like the Citibanks, those companies. So I like what you're thinking, but I'm not a fan. Not a fan of the regional banking index. Now, speaking of that, let's talk a little bit about China. And there was a report that came out on... actually, you know what? I'm going to talk about Apple first. I changed my mind. So Apple is reportedly eyeing the sale of some Europe bonds, European-denominated bonds. And why is that? You know, early last year, they pretty much picked the top in the bond market by issuing $17 billion of dollar-denominated bonds in April 2013. And that was right near the low on the 10-year Treasury yield. If you look at what it was, what the 10-year Treasury was yielding back in April of last year, it was yielding at about 1.6, 1.7, somewhere in that range. And today it yields 2.35. So you've had a pretty big move in interest rates higher. And, you know, that's they picked the right time for that. $17 billion in bonds that they issued, and they also issued $12 billion earlier this year, this April. And so why are they now potentially issuing European bonds? Well, the big reason is because the yields over there are now much lower than they are here. So the average yield in Europe for non-financial companies issuing bonds in euros is near a record low of 1.47%. And that means Apple will get even lower than that because their credit rating by Moody's is AA1 by Moody's is AA1 and Standard & Poor's is AA+, which is the second highest rating you can get. So they're extremely highly rated by the credit agencies, what it also does is it creates diversifies their funding source. So, meaning that they're going to get a lot of euros, and all of the money that they spend in Europe to do business, which granted might not be as much as it is here in the U.S. or globally, but they can still use that money to go out and fund their operations in Europe. And you know, the money they make in Europe, they can use to pay interest and principal on these bonds. And so it diversifies the currency they need to pay back their bonds. What else? And not only that, but the European Central Bank is pushing yields even lower. So, you know, the 10-year yield on a German bond is 0.86% versus 2.35 here. So that is why Apple is going out there and borrowing money now in euros, and this is probably going to actually be issued tomorrow, Tuesday. It's being underwritten by Deutsche Bank and Goldman Sachs. They're arranging the transaction. And so you're seeing, you know, this is how these big corporations do it. They have to think smartly about where they borrow money, why they're borrowing money in that particular currency, in that particular region. And remember, they have a fiduciary liability to make sure that they do the best for their company on behalf of their shareholders. And if they don't, shareholders can sue them. Just like shareholders have sued executives for worse than picking the wrong, or for less than picking the wrong area to issue their bonds. So that's why Apple is doing that. Let's go to Mark in Northern California. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Justin, great show. Well, hey, you know what? Let me just ask you, are you and Steve generally slowly turning positive for equities?
I would say, we're, you know, cautiously, you know, the rebound in August, at the end of October was pretty momentous, pretty spectacular. Now, was that short covering only, or was that the pullback we needed to refresh the bull market? I think that's still not decided yet. But you know, like I said, that rebound was definitely a step in the right direction. You know, there's still areas of worry, like oil prices continue to go lower, like the junk bond market, which is still has rebounded, but it's still not showing me, you know, great momentum. So, you know, if those things continue to weaken, you know, likely it's hard for me to see the market continue to go up.
Okay, yeah, because that is looking at the financials and tech. But anyway, I'll go to my question, the stock TRP.
Yep.
It looks like the growth is really slow and the PE is really high. And I've been holding it, and I looked at the chart lately in the last month or so. It's had some big swings, and I just don't know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, well, we actually had owned this for about the last year, and we, you know, we did pretty well. Net pays a nice dividend, 3.5%. We actually sold it recently, and if oil prices continue to go down, they're going to have a lot of trouble. Now, the positive is the Keystone Pipeline. If that gets approved, that could pop it, and if the Republicans win the Senate tomorrow, that could be, you know, give a nice boost to this name. But overall, I think you're right. It is a little expensive, and I would get rid of it soon. Maybe not tomorrow, but soon. Now, we have a few more minutes to get your call in. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you.
This is the Monday, November 3rd edition of Invest Talk with portfolio manager Justin Klein. Is active or passive investing best? Could there be a hybrid combining the best of both? That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. Please join us then. And there's still plenty of time today to get in touch. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's touch on China. Now, the five biggest banks in China reported sharply rising bad loans for the third quarter, mainly because of a slowing economy. And one of the banks is talking about a credit crunch that's squeezing small companies in the country's export-oriented eastern provinces. And they think it might be spreading westward. The Commercial Bank of China, which is the largest one in the sector, posted their largest quarterly rise in bad loans in 2 years as the slowdown stretched more companies' ability to repay those debts. And they talked about it. They talked about the powerhouse Yangtze and Pearl River Delta regions, where a lot of the manufacturing happens in China. It says there's a large percentage of private sector firms that have less access to funds than state-owned firms, which is state-owned peers, which is what you've seen for a long, long time there in China, that the banks really only have been lending to other state-owned enterprises. Most of the banks are state-owned enterprises. And they're worried that in the future, the possibility that risks will gradually spread from small and micro enterprises to large and medium enterprises, and from eastern region to the coastal areas of China, where risks have concentrated to central and western regions, will be intensified. So they're worried about. This is from BOCOM, China's fifth largest listed bank. And so they've had some recent profit reports as well, not doing well, missing estimates. China's listed banks are expected to report an overall 15% year-on-year drop in revenue for the third quarter, making them the weakest performing banking sector in the Asian region. Now, that's the negative. Well, the positive is their stocks are very cheap. Chinese banks are trading an average of 1 year forward price-to-earnings ratio of 4.3. The problem is, can you really trust those profit figures? You know, it's really hard for me to do. And the biggest worry here is that the decline in fixed asset investment could hit Western provinces very, very hard, because in recent years, their growth was driven by the construction industry, and the real estate sector over there is not doing very well. So that's what's going on in China, and that along with Europe is definitely on my radar of the problems that could start to accelerate and cause broader issues in the global economy. Now, when you ask a question on our 24-hour listening line, we try to answer it on the next program. Our anytime number is 888-99-CHART. Here's a call that came in over the weekend.
Hi, my name is Osman from Minnesota. I love your show. I'm asking about CJES, it's an energy service company. I wonder what's your take on this. It has been a downtrend for some time with the oil prices. Thank you so much.
This is C&J Energy Services. They provide hydraulic fracturing and coiled tubing services with a focus on complex well completion in the United States. So it's a fracking company. And it's done well for a long time. But the problem now is, with like all the oil companies, oil prices are down, and they continue to go down. It's hard for me to see a place where there's a bottom. Now, Steve thinks they'll hold up a little bit better than I do. I think they'll continue down. And why? Because this is driven a lot by oversupply. And how do you get rid of oversupply? Well, prices, oversupply in any commodity sector, is prices need to go below a certain level to where enough suppliers stop producing, meaning enough oil drillers stop drilling because it's not economical anymore. They're not making money. And if you read reports, fracking, it used to be like $80. You'd be over $80. Well, they've gotten so good at it now that it's gotten down to $60 a barrel. So that's why I think oil prices can continue down from right now, they're in the high 70s, all the way to 60 and maybe even a little bit lower. So until then, this isn't going to turn around. And so I would stay away from it, unless you think oil prices are going to turn around, but I still don't think they will. So I would stay away. Now, before we close the hour, our Wealth Workshop webinar will be coming up soon. We'll cover more practical money matters that impact everyone: Social Security, retirement, pension income, and how to make adjustments to reduce risk or become more aggressive with your retirement portfolio. Sign up for free on InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KP Financial, we thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.